Hello everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the artistic, creative side of the tracks, from indie to AAA. My name's John, I'm your host. I'm recording on a rainy, wind-whipped Friday night, a dark night, on the 17th of November, out in Reykjavik, Iceland, as always. And I think that we're in the sliver of the year that passes for autumn. It kind of just skips autumn and spring here, and kind of just flips straight to winter for half of the year. So we're just getting settled in over here for what is about to come, 6 months of winter. But it is definitely the best time in the year for playing video games, when it's horrible outside and you are cozy and you have a long weekend ahead of you, like I do right now. Great time for playing games. And it's getting to a fun time of the year as well, as we press on through November towards December, and games of the year have started appearing on people's minds. People are starting to talk about it, people are starting to think about it. I certainly am too. And it's always a fun time when releases start to slow down towards the end of the year, to look back across the year that was, and to pick out the games that you feel like you should have played, or the games that you wanted to play but didn't quite get to. And try and get through some of those. Just make sure that none of those are games that are going to sneak into your Games of the Year top 10 list. So I'm doing that right now, and I played one of those games this week. It is a game that I initially passed over. The trailer didn't win me from the off. It does have a cool visual style, but something about it wasn't quite speaking to me. Not quite sure why, but I've heard some good things about it. The reviews kind of overperformed a lot. I've heard some friends talking about this game, so I finally picked it up. It is Goodbye Volcano High, a kind of a high school drama with a cartoon style and a rhythm game music aspect to the whole thing. So I'm going to talk about that game. I've just finished it right before I started recording this podcast, and I had a really good time with that game. It's an interesting one to talk about. It does some things that I think are pretty unusual, actually. It's a different spin on the visual novel style. So I'm looking forward to talking about that one with you today. But before we get to that, I think the big news item of this week was probably the unveil of the Game Awards nominees. I'm fairly on the record as thinking that the Game Awards, the sort of self-styled Oscars of video games, are actually often not very tasteful, a little bit like the Oscars, I suppose. I think there are better awards ceremonies out there. I think the BAFTAs are more tasteful. I think the DICE Awards are often more interesting. I think that the GDC Awards are super interesting, and the IGF Festival. There's loads of good awards out there. But, you know, the Game Awards comes at the end of the year. It is kind of like the firing gun for awards season. Sorry, Golden Joysticks, but it kind of is. It's always a big talking point. There's an awful lot of gravity that centres around these nominations. And so it's always interesting just to see what has been picked, even if you don't think that these awards are the best in town or really representative of what's good out there. But it is a very stacked year, and so it was highly anticipated, I would say. People were very curious about what would and would not make it into the Games of the Year, Game of the Year category. And six games made it. It was Alan Wake 2, my favourite, of course, Baldur's Gate 3, Mario Wonder sneaked in there. I think that was a surprise to some. Resident Evil 4 Remake sneaked in there, a surprise to even more people, I would say. I wonder if that is the first remake ever to make this category. And I also wonder if that's a sign of things to come, with a lot more remakes happening these days. The last two were Spider-Man 2, which just seemed like an almost automatic nomination. I haven't really heard people singing this game's praises, even that those who really like it are a little bit measured. But it's a big Sony game, so there it is. It got in. And finally, Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, which I think earlier in the year would have been everyone's shoe-in for Game of the Year. One of the most hyped and highly acclaimed titles ever, you could say. So that was it. A few games didn't make it. I mean, a big favourite of mine on this podcast is obviously Starfield by Bethesda. This was pretty much passed over in the entire Game Awards, apart from one nomination in the Best RPG category. which Baldur's Gate 3 will obviously win. So Starfield snubbed. If I was a headline writer, I would be writing Starfield snubbed by the Game Awards. I am surprised it didn't get a Best Game nod. I am surprised that it did not get a Best Music nod, given the huge, sweeping orchestral score that it has. I do tend to think that Jeff Keighley and the Game Awards panel, they give nods to all of the different major studios usually. It's rare for there to be like a real snub. Even games that maybe aren't destined to win will often get awards in different categories, you know, like Best Sound Design or something like that. I guess the other big one that didn't make it in, there's two more that didn't make it into the Game of the Year. Final Fantasy 16 didn't make it, and Jedi Survivor didn't make it. It's very interesting to me that those two didn't. I think on another year, they would easily have made the Games of the Year category. But in this stacked year, they didn't. I'm a little surprised that Final Fantasy didn't get in past, you know, RE4 Remake or Mario Wonder. It seems like critics were pretty hot on that one. And it is a Final Fantasy game after all. But there we go. Interesting year. So that is 9 possible contenders for best game. Whereas in some years, there are 3 obvious ones and then 3 kind of filler spots, you know. So an interesting year for that category. As for the other highlights, I'm just going to give a couple here. The category that most caught my attention was Games for Impact. This is a very strange category. I don't really know what they mean by Games for Impact. It seems to include games that are not from America. games that have anyone queer in them. I'm not quite sure what they're getting at here. I suppose it's the socially minded category, but it just seems a little condescending for socially minded to also sometimes mean non-white, non-Western. But there you go. Interesting selections nonetheless. Chia made it in there. A Space for the Unbound, a game that I played, did not finish and didn't review, but perhaps should do something more with. Goodbye Volcano High, the game that I'm reviewing this week. Venba, Chance of Sennar, bit of a bizarre inclusion. And Terra Nil, a very, very good game that I reviewed earlier in the year. Obviously, the indie game category is of interest. This one has Cocoon, Dave the Diver, Dredge, Sea of Stars, and Viewfinder. Viewfinder, I didn't think people were very hot on that one, so I'm surprised to see it there ahead of, you know, a lot of other titles, to be honest. The best debut indie game category is the same, except Dave the Diver is switched out for Pizza Tower. So again, Cocoon, Dredge, Sea of Stars, Viewfinder in the debut category too. It's kind of silly to have 2 indie game categories and then just repeat pretty much all of the nominees. The same thing happened last time. I think several times the same game has won both of them, which really does defeat the object. But there you go. That was the Game Awards nominees. I think it's happening at the start of December. I will be tuning in. I'm always curious. Despite shit-talking it like I did just now, I am curious to see what wins. I'm curious to see where the critics fall on these games. And I am looking forward to making my own Games of the Year series. I tend to have some guests on as the year winds on, and I'm starting to organise that now. I'm really looking forward to Games of the Year season, having some guests on, finding out about some games that I missed, talking through all of the Games of the Year. It also gives me a little bit of catch-up time as well, so if I do a few Games of the Year episodes, that means the pressure is off me to have a game to review every week, and I really can revisit games from earlier in the year and get my list together, maybe replay a couple of games even. So I'm really looking forward to Games of the Year time. I hope you are too. Do subscribe to the show if you haven't already, and you will get all of that Games of the Year goodness in your podcast feed. And just before we get on to the main review of the show, let me just say this is a patron-supported show. There are 11 bonus episodes that are only for patrons that you get immediately if you sign up to support the show at patreon.com/gamingintheWild. There is a link in the description for that. I just published a new patron episode about my trip to Japan. I talked about it a little bit on the show, but this is a behind-the-scenes one. It's not just about Akihabara, the Nintendo store. It's about all sorts of things. It's about the general experience of flying into and being in Japan for a while, taking the Shinkansen bullet train to Kyoto, going and hiking over a mountain. All of the little observations, personal, cultural, the cityscape, the landscape, the Shinto I talk about a lot. So if you're interested in that episode, hearing about my experience in Japan. There are other ones too. There are some music episodes. There are some game music episodes. I do have one more planned before the end of the year, which is a roundup of 2023 game music. It will be a radio-style show for patrons only, so that's patreon.com/gamingintheWild if you'd like to join in. There are a bunch of other perks as well, such as our wonderful Discord server and a bunch of other fun perks. So thank you very much to all of my existing patrons, and thank you to you if that's something you would consider. And with that said, let's move on and talk about the featured game of this episode, Goodbye Volcano High. So Goodbye Volcano High is kind of a musical game, I guess. It does have a heavy focus on music. I played that entire song there just to give you the flavour. It's a very nice track. This one is developed and published by Co-op, spelt K-O-O-P. This is an artist-run studio of 8 people. They've made a few games before, but when I was looking on their website, I realised that I hadn't heard of any of them. They've made a couple games called Skipping Stones, GNOG, and Winding Worlds. I haven't heard of those games before, but I am curious now, so maybe I will go back and check them out. Interestingly, this game was made using the Inkle engine from Inkle, the engine used to make Heaven's Vault, Overboard, and all of the Inkle games. The soundtrack is by Debu, D-E-B-U, with vocals by Brigitte Nagar of the band Common Holly. It came out on PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, and PC only. Kind of surprising, actually. It's surprising to me that it's not on Switch. It seems like the kind of game that might appeal to the Switch crowd. But given the reception of this game, given its Game Awards nomination, it must be a matter of time before it's out on everything. As for where I played it on Steam on the ROG Ally, so I played this as a handheld game on my new handheld, and it ran pretty well. A couple bugs that I will talk about, but for the most part, it was very good. How long to beat? How's this one? At around 6 hours. And it's pretty linear. I don't think there's much room for manoeuvre or completionism going on here. It's just a 6-hour story game. Metacritic has this one at 81 on PS5 and 82 on PC, so it's scoring 8 out of 10 on average. One of the highest reviews is from Player 2, who said it's a bittersweet story about navigating life, uncertainty, and new beginnings. Goodbye Volcano High is one that will resonate with many and bends the genre in all the right ways. One of the lesser reviews gave it a 5 out of 10. This was from Hey Poor Player, who do seem to be on the critical side quite often. They mildly praised it as an uncomplicated and down-to-earth narrative experience, but they criticised bland writing and clichéd characters, something I found pretty surprising. And I will say that I don't agree with that take. But, you know, I say that as someone who has got some fondness for things like John Hughes, like The Breakfast Club, My So-Called Life. I enjoy high school drama as a genre, and you do have to embrace the tropes if you do like that kind of thing. So perhaps that reviewer was just not into the vibe of the whole thing. And maybe worth noting that high school drama is a big element of this game. Teen drama, crushes, breakups, friend drama. So if you're not into that genre of entertainment, then mileage may vary in how much you enjoy it. And as for how the developers describe this game, they say it's a hybrid rhythm game, coming of age, and interactive movie experience about growth, acceptance, and the power of community. The world's about to explode just in time for senior year. What will you do at the end of an era? And I have to say about this one, it's a lush visual novel about a high school band at the end of the world. Playing as a goth dino called Fang, we navigate crushes, fallouts, band practice, and D&D via dialogue choices and light rhythm gameplay. It's an absorbing narrative game lit up by sparkling writing, sensuous art, and a dreamy guitar pop soundtrack. So I'm pretty high on this one, actually. I would say that 8 out of 10 is maybe a fair score. I would probably lean upwards if we were doing decimals or halves or whatever. But this is a really, really good game. I like a lot of things about it. Sometimes to my own surprise, I will say, given what I usually like in visual novels, this game throws that out of the window to some degree in various ways that I will delve into in this review. But at the start of the game, we're playing as Fang, and Fang is a very, very, very cool protagonist. I really, really like Fang. Fang is an 18-year-old high school senior. Fang is non-binary. Fang is an anthropomorphic goth pterodactyl. So that's what we're doing in this game. It is a game about high school, but it is also a game in which everyone in the school are dinosaurs. And there is a lot going on for these poor dinosaurs. It does allow for a very cool art style. You've got all of these different species of anthropomorphic dinosaurs, different personalities, different color schemes. It's pretty cool. It has like a cartoony quality to it. But Fang is probably the coolest of all. Fang has white wings, white skin, bright eyes with vertical pupils. And Fang is the cool goth kid from school. Fang is always wearing black crop tops, ripped jeans, tees and blouses with cutouts, eye makeup that seems to change every day, bleached silver hair with a side part, and a really, really nice, rich speaking voice. This is a voiced game, and Fang's voice actor does a great job, and the artist did a great job too. Fang is a really cool person to spend time with in the game, and it really helped things along. Fang is the singer in a band called Worm Drama, which is a very, very rock name for the kind of music that they play. Worm Drama sounds like a punk band or a hardcore band to me. But Worm Drama is Fang and a couple of high school friends called Trish and Reed, both of whom are really cool characters. The kind of music that they play is actually sensitive, melodic, kind of cozy guitar pop. I was trying to place a musical reference for it. If any of you out there listen to the band Soccer Mommy, which are a big favourite of mine, then you will know this sound. It is autumnal, it is pleasant, it is melodic, kind of melancholic, really nice musical style, and that's the kind of music that Worm Drama play, which helped me out a little bit in this game, I would say. It really helps if you enjoy the music. There is a lot of music in this game, and it adds a lot of the vibe to the whole thing. And at the start of the story, we find out that Fang's parents are away, they're on holiday. There are a couple of calls with them, chats with them. Fang has a brother called Nasa. I think he's a year older, or maybe they're the same age, actually, if they're graduating high school together. But Nasa is the sensible one. Nasa is like a kind of charming, slick kind of person. And you get a little bit of sibling to and fro when Fang is at home. And then you get to go into school. You get to talk to all the other people. You get to prepare for Battle of the Bands, which Worm Drama are hoping to win. They are dreaming of winning an appearance at Caldera Fest, getting a touring van with the Worm Drama logo on it, and hitting the road for a career as a band. And so in the game, we do band practice, where the rhythm game comes in. We go to class, we have funny conversations, we choose dialogue options, we deal with crushes, we deal with social drama, all through text conversations. And it's all very mellow and fun until the end of the first chapter. There are 8 chapters in this game. You can play it in a Netflixy kind of way if you want. Always something that I like, especially on a handheld game. But at the end of the first chapter, this is not a spoiler. It's in the promo stuff for the game. Suddenly there are news reports everywhere of an unidentified meteor hurtling towards the planet. And suddenly, for Fang and everyone, they have so much more to deal with. It's enough to deal with high school. And high school coming to an end, but it's not just high school that is coming to an end for them, but the end, potentially, of life on Earth. So that's the story setup for the game. It's very cool. I really enjoyed the story setup. I was kind of in. I wanted to know what was going to happen. But the first thing I want to talk about in highlighting why I enjoyed this game, and I think maybe the most striking thing about the game when you first open it up, is the general presentation. I'm starting with the visual style. This game looks like a cartoon, and the best kind of cartoon. It is very refined, it is line drawn, the characters are packed with personality. All of the different characters that you will meet are based on different species of dinosaur. So Fang and Nasa and their family are winged dinosaurs, like pterodactyl-type creatures. But you will meet all of the different peoples in the school are different kinds of dinosaur species. You'll meet some winged, you'll meet some horned. They all have different colors, different palettes, different patterns, different eye colors and bodily proportions. And I think there's something very special in the art of this game, because that sounds like it could go either way, you know, Dinosaur High School, but it goes the right way here, and I think it's in the details. There's a lot of attention given to the fashion in the game, some people wearing jeans and hoodies, some people wearing leggings and tees, some with tattoos, some with spiked hair, but it feels very contemporary, some in tees and dungarees, different gender expressions, different personalities. And whilst high school, I guess, might be tropes, I mean, the whole of the Breakfast Club is, you know, the weirdo, the punk, the jock, the prom queen, and the nerd. And all of that is here. But there's a little bit more to it than that. It's updated, it's modern, and it feels right. And I really enjoyed some of the main characters in the game. For example, starting with your bandmates. Reed is the drummer, and Reed has such a strong personality. This is not just a trope character. Reed is very, very calm, a bit of a stoner, has very bright purple eyes that seem to hone in on you when they are talking. They are very slender, they're very bored, they're always wearing a vest and just kind of flouncing around. But there's a sense that they seem to see more than they let on. And I really like that about Reed. Reed was quite a mysterious character with a tousled mess of hair, and I really enjoyed all of the time that Reed was on the screen. The other band member is called Trish, a very different personality, a little purple triceratops with curly mop of hair, very spirited, with a cute little nose horn, always in a big baggy hoodie, always very full of energy, and with a fascination with bugs. That's like all Trish talks about is this fascination with bugs, bug facts, and it's where the name Worm Drama came from. So two very, very different personalities. They are really, really cool and striking and memorable, I think. And they have a great supporting cast too. There is a character called Naomi, who is the goody two-shoes star pupil with A grades and big plans. And Naomi struggles hardest with coping with the idea of losing the future, having worked so hard for it. There is, of course, Nasa. This is your brother, who you will talk to at home. Smart, responsible, calm. I think they are like class president or whatever it is in the US. But they're very unruffled, they're very cool, but they have a human side under the surface too. So there is a whole great cast in this game. I was really happy to see most of them, honestly. Such good personalities. There is a supporting cast of loopy friends too that fit some of those other high school ideas. There is a cosmic tarot fan who will read your fortune. There is a steadfast girl next door. There are weary teachers. It's all very cool. I really like the characterizations here. And I just want to say, whilst finishing off the visual style, please don't judge me on this next bit. Without wishing to sound like a furry or anything like that, these dinos are kind of hot, man. I have to say it. So, yeah, don't judge me. But there is a very intentional, graceful quality to the drawing here. There is a really, really elegant quality to the lines, to angles, the outfits, the expressions. There is a sensuous kind of intention here in the illustration that I wasn't expecting. It really works. The character designs absolutely sing in this game. There is so much character and personality packed into all of the people that you meet. And it's aided by the voice acting. This is a fully voiced game. All of the actors are stellar. Great delivery. Really well directed, really well written. And most of the time they are sidestepping the cringy, like, hello fellow teens vibe that we often get when adults write younger characters. This is just really witty. It feels like it was written by people that were these people, are these people, or know these people. I really like the dialogue. It's packed with really good little jokes and nice little moments. Like, just before I started recording, I was finishing off the game. There's a scene where Fang is freaking out, going on a date, and they say, I hate all my clothes, I hate all my clothes. And their brother Nasser replies, you hate all of your clothes? Because that's a lot of hate. Which just really made me laugh. It's just a good little gag. And it's always like that in this game. It's not easy stuff to write, but they did a great job here. It's funny, sparky, loads of personality. Really nicely done. As for what you're actually doing in the game, it's a dialogue-heavy game. It is a narrative game for sure. I phrase this one as a visual novel. I noticed that the developers did not use that phrase, but it is a VN with a little bit of rhythm game in there too. Mostly you are choosing dialogue. Sometimes you are just reading text. And there are a lot of choices, and they are represented quite interestingly here, I would say. Some choices are easy or trivial. It's like a normal chat. You're just choosing dialogue options. You can choose, though, to be more confrontational, more friendly, more amenable. You do have choice to express yourself here. And there is an affinity system, which I'll get to later as well. So, in theory, it matters. But the fun thing about this system is that some choices are harder than others. And this is really well represented visually. For example, if you have to say something difficult, or you have to say something that Fang finds challenging, the typeface changes when you are choosing that option and how that text is presented. If Fang is about to spill out with excitement but isn't sure if they want to, then the text might be glittering and wavering, and you know that that is an excitable, emotional option. If Fang is angry and is maybe about to say some harsh words, then as you hover over those words, the dialogue box might split in two as if cleft. So for these consequential choices, you know how Fang is feeling in a really cool way. And when you select one of those ones that has an emotional, visual attachment to it, you have to hold down the triggers on the joypad as well to say it. There is a heart beating, the screen kind of shakes, and it zooms in a little before the dialogue continues. It's a really neat trick. It's like Fang is forcing themselves to say something, forcing something out, whether because it is something that makes them feel vulnerable, revealing emotion, or whether it's because they know they're saying something they might regret. And it kind of surprisingly accurately reflects the feeling, I think, of saying something difficult or putting yourself out there. And it happens now and then, and so you do get to a sense of Fang's character here. That Fang is perhaps a little more introverted than you might think for a singer, and struggles to always articulate themselves in the right way or to feel comfortable doing it. I thought that was a very neat system for a dialogue delivery, choice-based dialogue system. I really liked it. There is an affinity system and social circles. So ostensibly, you are making friends with people or alienating them based on your choices, although I would say doesn't really seem to matter at the end of the day. But in the pause menu, you see a little solar system of characters with Fang at the center and all of the different people that Fang knows revolving around them. And as you raise affinity, these people will move in a level and get closer to Fang in their orbit. It's fun to see. It's a nice visual representation of a friendship group. I have to say, though, that I felt like all the main characters just ended up in my closest circle without me really trying. I was just playing the game, picking what I thought seemed right, and without much feeling of jeopardy, everyone got along pretty well. The only characters that were on outer circles are ones that weren't in the game as much, that I didn't have as much time to get close to. Maybe completionists might try and choose to make fringe characters their best friend on a 17th playthrough or something. And I would say that usually this might be a downside for me. I like to feel agency. And especially in visual novels or choice-based games, I like to feel that my decisions are consequential. But in this game, something about it made me just happy to watch the story unfold. Like those concerns that often nag at me when I'm playing one of these kind of games and feeling like I'm just clicking through text. It didn't happen here. I was quite happy playing the game. There is something about it. It just has a nice quality to it. that made me feel like I was watching a story unfold, and I was happy doing it. I played a lot of this game, and I realized several times playing this game that I had a smile on my face, like a wistful, genuine smile that just crept over my face because of the characters, the look, the feel, the music, the story. I was just really enjoying it. So this game is doing a lot right, despite a lack of consequence that I would usually look for in a visual novel. And there is also some rhythm game gameplay. You are in a band in this game. You will do band practice, you will do concerts. It's a fairly rudimentary rhythm game. You will push sticks left or right to hit targets in time. There are timed button presses on the face keys. There are times when you have to use the sticks simultaneously, usually to hit cymbals or something like that. And I must admit, I had a little bit of trouble with this. I felt like there was maybe a touch of latency. The music didn't quite seem in time with what I was looking at on the screen. I don't know if it's an Ally thing. I'd be curious to hear from people who played it on PlayStation. Did you feel there was latency? Did you feel that the audio was entirely in sync? But there is an option for generous press windows that you can activate in the accessibility settings. I did that. I will also say that performing well, the rhythm game is just an activity. It's not like you're going for golds or anything like that. Like, you don't get a percentage mark at the end of the track. You can do well, in which case you get achievements and you get a photo, which will appear in the menu as a reward. But if you just bumble through it and fail, there are no story outcomes attached to that. The story is going to be how it is going to be. How you play does not impact it. Again, that is something that I think might have bothered me usually, but in this game, for some reason, I just felt intensely comfortable with. I was just happy to be playing through Fang's story, and I just wanted to see what happened next. There is some other gameplay stuff too. There is a very cool game in a game in this. You know, lots of games like to have little games in them. In this one, it's not what you might expect. It's not an arcade machine that you can play, which is the classic. In this one, it's L&L. The friends will meet for Dungeons & Dragons sessions. But here in this game, Dungeons & Dragons is L&L, so it's Legends & Lore. This is an in-game version of D&D. I won't spoil it for you, because it's very cool to see and play. But if you like tabletop role-playing, this was a fun little part of the game. You get different character art for your for Fang's L&L character, who is called Faye, who is a dark mage, fittingly for Fang. Reed is the dungeon master, and you get to play through these sections. It's pretty much the same gameplay. You're making choices, but you're playing D&D. It's actually really, really fun. And as this story progresses, it touches on lots of interesting stuff. You will have Fang wrestling with their identity, with their ambition, realizing that perhaps other people around Fang don't feel the same or don't feel the way that they thought. You will have high school drama, social drama, love life drama, the drama of the end of the world and how people respond to the news of the meteor, the ever-elevating high pitch of news broadcasts as people get, you know, theories about what's going to happen, as people prognosticate about whether it will or won't hit. And of course, it all comes to a really good crescendo. I really enjoyed what they did with the story here. And I think I would like to hone in on a couple of details, because I have described that without consequential choices and skill-based outcomes on the rhythm game, and the dialogue choices not feeling impactful, these are all things that might have bothered me, but I wanted to mine in a little to why they don't. I think there is something special to this game. I think that there is a combined effect of lots of really well-done stuff that makes it click together. There is the visuals, as I have described, beautifully drawn. Really, really beautifully drawn. The amount of character that is packed into these these dinosaurs, these school teens, is amazing. And the fact that the voices go so well with the characters and that they are acted so well. Most voice acting that you hear isn't that great in games, honestly. That might be a controversial take, but I think it's true. Here it is top grade stuff. However these voice actors were directed, they feel casual, they feel relaxed, they feel like people, and they do not feel like they're reading from the page, which is the real trick with voice acting, right? You feel like you're watching the character and not the actor. So that is incredibly well done and incredibly difficult to do. So you have the look, the sound, the music, the characterization, the witty writing, and it all clicks together. So even though I could pick at the individual elements of this one, I don't think it's necessary. I don't want to. I think the game does what it sets out to do. It's a lovely narrative experience with enough gameplay to keep you interested. And it's just so full of nice details, man. Like, as you are moving from scene to scene, this is where I got that wistful kind of feeling. Like, scenes will often start with an establishing shot of a building exterior, like the outside of the high school, the outside of a gig venue, down at the beach, if they're sitting on the beach talking and staring at the stars wistfully. But they will always start with a shot of the sky. So you will see all of these beautiful images of the sky, and then the camera scrolls down to that establishing shot, pans down. And when you look at the sky, it's such a lovely way to intersperse scenes with space. You'll often see clear blue skies with nice clouds and sunny. And then it will scroll down, pan down, and the characters start doing their thing. And then later, you will see the bruised evening sky going purple, stars starting to appear. And then another scene, you might see nighttime stars, the moon, lights, stars in the sky. It's just very atmospheric. And then the camera will pan down, and the story will continue. And it's a small thing, but it really worked for me. It added this relaxing punctuation to the scenes in the game. It spaced them out a little bit. And also, every time you see the sky above these characters' heads, you are gently reminded of the horror in the sky, of the meteor that may hit the planet, of the precarity of the whole situation within which the story is unfolding. Small thing, but it really worked for me. I would also say another small thing in this game is texting. There is a lot of texting. Fang will often be on the phone, in bed, or sitting in the kitchen, or sitting in school, texting friends. And texting in games can work, or it can really not work. And here it does. And I think that it's because of another detail. It's because we look at Fang when Fang is texting. Fang's facial expressions are really cool on the character. So if Fang shows delight, it will play across the face of the character. If they show concern, it will play across the face of the character. So we're not just reading texts, but we are seeing Fang, the character, the fully fleshed out character, emotionally responding to the implications of these texts as they unfold. A small detail, but an important decision, actually, because if it wasn't for that, we would just be reading texts and I think we'd get bored. And every turn in this game, there is stuff like that going on. I feel like, in fact, let's just move into the upsides of this game as we're getting towards the end of the review. But to roll on from there, like, everything in the game is so slick. It is easy to navigate. It is easy to understand. It is well signposted. It is well constructed. And all of the little details that I'm describing add up to something that is more than the sum of its parts. It just coheres so well. And it all goes down so smoothly that it would be easy to miss just how accomplished this game is. But I think it is worth recognizing that all of those small details, all of those small decisions, those directorial decisions, when should we see characters' faces? When should it zoom in? When should there be a second where a character's eye just twitches, or their iris, their pupil expands? When are they making eye contact or just looking at each other? When is there an awkward silence? You know, how are we framing all of these shots? It's all good. So this game is the result of a lot of choices very well made. It's a very well integrated vision. And that's kind of improbable given the themes, the setting, the scenario, dinosaur high school at the end of the world in a band. It's a stretch, but it works somehow. Other good things, the art, gracefully drawn characters, crisp, convincing interiors, classic exteriors, the way it's all put together. The music, both the band's music, which I actually really genuinely like, you know, and that's quite rare for me. I think bands and games are often a little cheesy or caricatures, but this sounds like a band I might listen to. The extra diegetic music also, the background music is really good, atmospheric. I've been using it throughout the podcast. The writing is very good. They are expected high school characters, but they are not just tropes. They all come with pleasing dashes of personality. And the game does an admirable job of integrating non-binary, trans and queer characters in a pretty unselfconscious way, I would say, which I really like. They don't feel tokenistic, as they often do in games. Gender and sexuality aren't their entire identity. They are just other characters in the school going through stuff with actual personalities. It's nice to see. And all of this melds into a really successful whole. I'm very impressed with what they've pulled off here. I admire the craftsmanship of this game. As for downsides, the choices don't feel consequential. But I only played through this game once. I did look it up. I don't think there are multiple endings. So it is a story game. And if you are looking for branching narratives, you may be disappointed. Although, apparently, you can influence relationships to get different scenes along the way. The game text does say your choices shape who Fang becomes. But there is only one ending, so I'm not sure that's true. It's perhaps a game that is dressed in a choice-based forking path costume, more than actually offering that, but it didn't bother me. I will also say, though, the rhythm game fell off. I think that is going to be a bigger sticking point for some people. I got controller lag. It meant that I was often missing my cues. I can see that annoying people, especially if you are into rhythm games. I turned on the forgiving inputs, and so I got through the latter parts of the rhythm game fine. It only happens maybe 10 times in the whole game, band practice or gig, you know. And there is no real punishment for messing it up. Something that I think might bother people if they like stakes in their games, you know. But for me, I think the low stakes of this game are actually part of the appeal, so that didn't bother me too much either. But all in all, this was an absolutely lovely experience. It's one of the best visual novels that I have played, certainly the best presented. It goes right up there at the top tier with games like Coffee Talk, which I loved also. It's probably better, in fact. Just on the strength of the writing and the presentation alone, it definitely deserves attention. And I would say especially if you like things like The Breakfast Club, if you like whatever the millennial version of that might be, that high school drama. For me, when I was growing up, it was My So-Called Life. You know, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Breakfast Club, all of that stuff. All of the ins and outs of high school life. If you are into that as a form of fiction, a form of entertainment, yeah, you may especially well click with this game. But for me, it was just a perfect game. I played in the evening. I played an episode a night. It was a low-stakes game to really relax with. You know, after work sometimes, you just want to sit back and play something that you can just enjoy with a smile on your face. That's what that game gave to me. It's really worth a play. That is my take on Goodbye, Volcano High. So I hope you enjoyed that episode. It was nice to come back and give a positive review, honestly. That Alan Wake 2 review last week screwed me up a little bit. I was like, who am I? I hate games. I really don't. I love games. And it was nice to come off the back of a game that was very challenging, that I struggled to enjoy, and to play a game like this that was just such a warm bath after the horror, intentional and unintentional, of Alan Wake 2. If you have played Goodbye Volcano High, if you have felt like you forged your own version of Fang, I would like to hear from you. You can find me on Twitter at Gaming in the Wild, also Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, everywhere. GamingInTheWild.com has all of the links for social media and ways to reach out. You can also email me if you want to. It's johnisgamingInTheWild@gmail.com. I love hearing from people, so feel free to drop me a line if you're a regular listener, if you enjoy the show, or if you just enjoyed this episode. Or if you didn't, you can still drop me a line. No hard feelings. You can also join the Patreon if you like the show. It's patreon.com/gamingInTheWild to get those extra episodes, join the Discord, come hang out with us, tell us what you're playing, put games on my radar for the podcast, and get all of those cool bonus episodes. I'm really looking forward to the end of year stuff. The end of year music episode is going to be great. So thanks very much for listening. Take care of yourselves and each other, and bye-bye for now.